A red line expands and flickers into letters, from New Line Cinema. A pair of ratty shoes stalks across a wet concrete floor. A hand reaches down and picks up a crumpled brown paper bag. New Line Cinema Media Home Entertainment Incorporated and Smart Egg Pictures present a Robert Shea production, a Wes Craven film. The pair of sooty hands dump out knives, copper tubing, and other tools onto a cluttered work table. Wearing a bright red sweater, the unseen man retrieves an old leather glove from the pile of tools. He files and shapes the copper tubes into fingerstalls, then welds a stainless steel knife blade onto the tip. After hammering the stall, his hands bend the joint, testing it alongside the knuckles of his fingers. Then, his hand slides into the glove. Suddenly, he spreads his fingers to make the blades flash. A blood-red title appears over black. A Nightmare on Elm Street. The finger blades pierce through a sheet. A frightened teenage girl with short blonde hair glances around her, surrounded by bright white. She trembles as she makes her way down the slick hallway of a stone cellar. She runs barefoot, wearing nothing but a nightgown. Starring John Saxon, Ronnie Blakely, Heather Langenkamp, Amanda Wiss, Nick Corey. Introducing Johnny Depp. Turning back to glance at the entrance, she stumbles onward, as steam billows and water drips from the ceiling. Tina stops, her face frozen. She turns around in a slow circle, searching. A sheep runs across the slick floor of the hall, and Tina darts away in fear. As she makes her way through the cramped walkways of a boiler room, the scarred and burned face of a darkened figure peeks out from behind a pipe, then sweeps past the screen. Tina pauses a moment, then makes her way past tangled pipework and dark steel railings, lit by dim overhanging lamps, and a hellish glow on the walls behind her. The view tilts down past a large conduit, partially obscured by veils of steam, and looks down at a forest of interlocking pipes, and thick bluish air below the walkways. The dark figure stalks past, out of sight. Tina rounds a corner into a narrow hall. She steps past wet corroded valves, and into a room lit with orange light. The figure's bladed glove scrapes a pipe with its sharp points. The four knives of the glove slice through a sheet next to Tina, and the man suddenly rips it in half. Tina runs helplessly down the hall. Turning the corner, she comes to a dead end at a blazing furnace. Crying, she watches as the shadow of the man passes by her. She slowly creeps out of the hall. Tina bolts upright in bed. Her mom.
You okay, Tina?
Just a dream, Mom.
Some dream, judging from that.
Her nightgown's been ripped by four vertical slashes.
Coming back to the sack, oh,
what? Ten's worth it. Tina, honey. You gotta cut your fingernails, or you gotta stop that kind of dreaming. One or the other.
After her mom leaves, Tina grabs a crucifix from over her bed and grips it tight. A guy parks his car with Tina and another girl.
When I woke up, it seemed like he was still in the room with me.
Sounds like a real boogeyman, one, two, Freddy's coming for you.
And that's what it reminded me of, that old jump rope song. It was the worst nightmare I ever had. You wouldn't believe it.
Matter of fact, I had a bad dream last night myself.
I had a heart on this morning when I woke up, Tina. Had your name written all over it.
There's four letters in my name, Rod. How could there be room on your joint for four letters?
Hey, up yours with a twirling lawnmower.
Nah, Rod's is the sweetest thing.
Oh, he's nuts about you.
Yeah, nuts. Anyway, I couldn't go back to sleep last night. So what do you dream?
Forget it, Tina. The point is that everyone has a bad dream once in a while. It's no biggie.
Yeah, next time you have one, just tell yourself that's all it is, right where you're having it, you know? Once you do that, you wake right up. At least it works for me.
He gives the other girl a kiss, then runs into school.
Hey, did you have a nightmare too?
He doesn't respond. Tina turns to her friend.
Maybe we're gonna have a big earthquake. They say things get really weird just before.
Nighttime, the friends gather at Tina's.
My mom said she was taking off for 2 days. I almost died.
No problem, Tina. Nancy and Glenn do the rescue.
I can't believe his mother's letting him spend the night here.
Right, well, she's not, exactly.
See, I got this cousin who lives near the airport. It's okay for me to stay with, right? And I got the sound effects tape from Rod. Hello, Mom? Yeah, out here at Barry's. Huh? Yeah, noisy as usual. Glad we don't live here, huh? Yeah, Aunt Eunice says hello. Right, I'll call you in the morning. Yeah, sure, just some kids drag racing outside, I think, Mom. Listen, Mom, I gotta go. I think there's been an accident out front. Right. Right, I'll call the police. No, just some neighbors having a fight, I guess. I'm fine. I'll call you in the morning.
It worked like a charm.
Smooth.
Jesus.
See, I told you you'd be feeling better.
All day long I've been seeing that guy's weird face. And hearing those fingernails.
Fingernails? That's amazing you saying that. That made me remember the dream I had last night.
What'd you dream?
I dreamed about a guy in a dirty red and green sweater.
Well, what about the fingernails?
Oh, he scraped his fingernails along things. Actually, they were more like finger knives or something. Something he'd made himself. They made a horrible sound. It's like, scream.
Nancy, you dreamed about the same creep I did.
That's impossible.
He turns to the window.
What?
Nothing.
There's something out there, isn't there?
I didn't hear anything.
Well, I heard something.
They all stand up. Tina and Nancy follow Glenn, gripping his arms as he goes and opens the door to the darkened backyard. They let go of him and remain on the porch as he ventures further out across the lawn.
I'm gonna punch out your ugly lights, whoever you are. Kitty, kitty.
Glenn stops, his body tensed, then continues on.
Chow, chow, chow.
He turns back and gives the girls a shrug.
Just while they bring your lamps down just 3 yards from the goal line. What a brilliant tackle, and the fans go wild.
What the hell are you doing here?
Came to make up, no big deal. You my home?
Of course. Oh, what's that?
Intense, huh?
He tosses a hook hand over his shoulder.
So what's going on here, an orgy or something?
Maybe a funeral, dickhead.
It's just a sleepover date, Rod. Tina and me. Glenn was just leaving.
You see his face?
You see his face?
Your mom ain't home, is she?
Me and Tina got stuff to discuss.
Rod.
We got our mother's bed. You guys got the rest.
Rod and Tina head inside.
I think we should get out of here. Hey, you guys are gonna hang around, right? I mean, don't leave me alone with this lunatic. Please, Nancy.
Rod covers her mouth and pulls her away. Glenn kisses Nancy.
Glenn, not now. We're here for Tina now, not ourselves.
Why is she so bothered by a stupid nightmare anyway?
Because he was scary, that's why.
After giving up on making out with Nancy, Glenn leads her back inside, and they shut the door and lock it. Nancy peers outside until Glenn takes her hand and pulls her off. Later, at 2 a.m., Glenn lies on the couch, unable to sleep from the noise. In the bedroom, Rod rolls off of Tina, and she grins.
I knew there was something about you I liked.
You feel better now, right?
Jungle Man fixed Jane.
No more fights?
No more fights.
Good. No more nightmares for either one of us, then.
When did you have a nightmare?
Guys can have nightmares too, you know. You can get a corner on the market or something.
He pulls a blanket over him, and the screen goes dark. Later, in Tina's room, the crucifix drops off the wall, waking Nancy. She picks it up off the pillow and looks at it. Glancing back at the wall from where the cross fell, Nancy sets it on the blanket beside her and goes back to sleep. A view from the street outside closes in on the darkened house, then slowly rises up to the master bedroom window. Lying in bed beside Rod, Tina startles awake at the sound. She glances around, then falls back again to her pillow and shuts her eyes. She startles again and tries to wake Rod. Her jaw clenched in fear, Tina gets out of bed, pulling on a shirt as she goes to look out the window. She winces as a pair of tiny rocks ricochet off the windowpane. Another rock leaves a spidered-out crack in the glass. She touches her finger to the crack, then pulls away.
Tina! Who do you think you are?
In the other bedroom, Nancy lies asleep in Tina's bed. Suddenly, the shape of a human face presses through the surface of the wall above her. A pair of hands appears on either side of the face, straining against the wall as if it were fabric. The wall stretches as the ghostly apparition reaches toward Nancy. As she wakes up, rubbing her eye, the face and hands recede back into the wall, leaving nothing but the flat white surface. She stares at the wall, then picks up the crucifix in her hand. Nancy hangs the cross back on the wall, then knocks on it, as if to check whether or not it's still solid. She lies back down and pulls the covers over her, unnerved. Downstairs, Tina checks out the kitchen window, then opens the back door to look outside.
Somebody there?
Tina.
She steps out, coming down the porch steps, wearing a button-down shirt over her bare legs.
Who the hell is that?
Tina walks across the lawn to the fence gate. She steps through to the alleyway behind her house. A trash can lid rolls across the ground, spinning as it comes to a rest on the pavement. The shadow of the scarred man in the hat looms around a corner. The shadowy figure's arms stretch out across the width of the alley, and he scrapes a metal wall with the knives of his glove.
Please, God.
This is God.
He holds up the finger blades, then chases her down the alley. He reappears at the other end of the alley, and she races back to her house.
This.
Leaping out from behind a tree, he lops off two of his fingers with the blades. He laughs as green blood spurts out. Tina runs.
Open the door!
Struggling, they fall off the porch. Tina holds back his bladed hand and pushes against his face. His scarred and pitted skin comes off in her hands, revealing a bloody skull. Rod wakes up in bed as Tina wrestles beneath the blankets with the monstrous man. Rod yanks off the covers to find Tina thrashing alone. Her shirt rips open and invisible claws tear through her chest. As blood gushes out, Tina's body floats into the air, swinging violently and smacking into Rod. From the floor, Rod watches as Tina gets dragged up to the ceiling, her arms and legs slick with bright red blood. He reaches toward her as she crawls across the ceiling, desperate to escape.
Tina! 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 Tina!
Rod! Rod!
Tina!
She falls to the bed, lifeless, and blood splatters on Rod.
Tina!
Who did this?
Tina!
I'll kill you! Who did this?
Oh God, you scared me!
Glenn and Nancy throw open the door. Glenn stumbles back at the gruesome sight of Tina's corpse, lying drenched in blood next to the bed. Staring in shock, Nancy sees the open window. Now, a police officer follows a lieutenant into the station.
What do you got?
Her name was Tina Grace. Her home, father abandoned 10 years ago. Mother's in Vegas with a boyfriend. We're trying to reach her now.
What's the coroner got?
Something like a razor was the weapon, but nothing was found at the scene.
It looks like the victim's boyfriend.
Where is she?
I'll put her in your office.
His name's Rod Lane. He's a musician type, arrest for drugs, brawling.
Terrific. What the hell was she doing there?
She lived there.
I don't mean her. I mean you. What was she doing there?
Hello to you too, Donald.
Marge. Okay.
Donald looks at Nancy, who sits next to her mother.
How you doing, baby?
I'm okay, Dad.
All right, look, I don't want to get into this now. God knows you need time. But I sure would like to know what the hell you were doing shacking up with three other kids in the middle of the night, especially a lunatic delinquent like Lane.
Rod is not a lunatic, Dad.
You have a sane explanation for what he did?
Apparently he was crazy jealous. Nancy said they'd had a fight.
It wasn't that serious.
Maybe you don't think murder is serious.
How can you say I don't take her death seriously? All I meant fights weren't that serious. You know, Tina, she dreamed this was gonna happen.
What?
She had a nightmare that someone was trying to kill her. That's why we were there, Mom. She just didn't want to sleep alone.
Morning. Nancy steps into the kitchen as her mother watches the TV news.
Police say the victim, 15-year-old Christina Gray, had quarreled earlier with her boyfriend, Rod Lane. Lane is now the subject of a citywide manhunt. The murder weapon, a straight razor or similar sharp object, has not yet...
Nancy's mom shuts off the TV.
Where do you think you're going? School. Honey, you were tossing and turning all night last night. You've no business going to school today.
I've got to go to school, Mother, otherwise I'll sit up there and go crazy.
Did you sleep?
I'll sleep in study hall. I'd rather keep busy, you know.
Right home after?
Right home after.
Okay.
See
you. See
you. Nancy kisses her mom and heads out. Her backpack looped over one shoulder. She walks down the sidewalk, dappled sunlight falling on her through the trees. Glancing over her shoulder, she notices an older man in a suit and sunglasses watching her from across the street. She keeps going, then whips her head back around, but the man is nowhere to be seen. Then, Rod grabs her from behind.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm not gonna hurt you.
He drags her into the bushes.
They're gonna kill me for sure.
Nobody's gonna kill you. Did you do it?
I never touched her.
You were screaming like crazy.
There was somebody else there.
The door was locked from your side.
Don't look at me like I'm some fucking fruitcake or something. I'm warning you.
Just move away from us, son. Real easy, like your ass depended on it.
Hold it!
No!
Jesus Christ!
Nancy blocks Donald's way as Rod sprints off. A cruiser pulls up and Rod runs the opposite direction. Another cruiser appears.
Hold it right there!
Watch it! Hold him!
All right, I'm cool.
Okay, I got him. On the ground, now.
Come on, get down.
Oh, Lieutenant, look at this. A switchblade.
I didn't do it. I didn't kill her, Nancy.
Daddy? You used me.
What the hell were you doing going to school today for anyway? Nancy? Nancy?
Yes.
Nancy!
Come on, let go of my arm.
What is seen is not always what is real. According to Shakespeare, there was something operating in nature. Perhaps inside human nature itself that was rotten. A canker, as he put it. Now, of course, Hamlet's response to this and to his mother's lies was to continually probe and dig. Just like the grave diggers. Always trying to get beneath the surface. The same is true in a different way in Julius Caesar. John, will you go ahead, please?
As Nancy sits wearily in the back of her English class, a student stands and reads.
In the most high and palmy state of Rome, a little ere the mightiest Julius fell. The grave stood tenantless, and the sheeted dead did squeak and gibber in the Roman streets. As stars with trains of fire and dews of blood, disasters in the sun and the moist air, Neptune's empire stands.
Nancy.
About to doze off, Nancy glances over and sees a bloodied Tina speaking from inside a body bag.
Oh God, I could be bounded in a nutshell and call myself a king of infinite space. Were it not that I have bad dreams.
As the boy reads, Nancy spots a puddle of dark blood in the school hallway. She stands and steps out of the classroom, leaving her classmates all frozen in their chairs. A trail of blood leads to the body bag. Suddenly Tina's feet are lifted into the air, and an invisible force drags her down a hall, out of sight. Nancy follows after her.
Tina?
Nancy runs right into a hall monitor in a red and green sweater, knocking her down.
Where's your pass? Screw your pass.
Dead leaves blow through the hall. The hall monitor waves a leather hand with bladed fingers, smiling with lines of blood running down her face. Nancy walks to a stairwell, following the bloody trail down the dingy steps. A sign reads, "No students allowed."
Nina?
She makes her way downstairs and opens a door. Stepping past a door with frosted glass and faded letters reading, Building Operating Engineer, she pulls open a pair of curtains.
Tina?
She finds herself in the school's poorly lit boiler room. Searching, she spots a fiery glow emanating from behind a row of massive tanks. The scarred face peers at her from behind a set of pipes.
Tina? Tina?
He steps out and staggers toward her.
Who are you?
He lifts his shirt and slices open his chest. Maggots spill out on a wave of green slime. Nancy throws open the curtains to escape, only to discover a concrete wall blocking her way. The man holds up his gloved hand, making the blades dance. Nancy sprints into the boiler room, making her way down the same suspended walkways Tina had explored. She finds herself in a dead end, and turns to see him stalking into view. He taps his four finger blades against a pipe. He creeps toward her, his bladed fingers outstretched. She presses her back against the wall behind her.
Come to Freddy.
Nancy presses her arm to a boiling hot pipe. She wakes up in class. Nancy gathers her things.
I'm okay. I'm fine.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll go straight home.
You'll need a hall pass. Back to work.
With her backpack and purse, Nancy hurries out of the school, exhausted and frightened. She stops on the sidewalk and heaves a sigh, running a hand through her hair. She looks down and notices a bright pink burn mark on her forearm. Now, a guard leaves the room as Nancy sits outside the bars of Rod's jail cell.
And then what happened?
I told you. It was dark, but I'm sure there was somebody in there, under the covers with her.
How could somebody be under the covers with you guys without you knowing about it?
How the fuck do I know? I don't expect you to believe me anyway.
What did he look like? Did you get a look at him?
No.
Well, then how do you know that somebody else was there?
Because somebody cut her while I watched.
And you didn't get a look at her?
You couldn't even see the fucker. You could just see cuts happening all at once.
What do you mean, all at once?
I mean, it was as if there were four razors cutting at the same time. But invisible ones. I probably could have saved her. If I'd have moved sooner. But I thought it was just another nightmare. Like the one I had the night before. There was this guy. He had knives for fingers.
Rod holds up his hand, and Nancy backs away, staring.
Hey, you think I did it?
No.
She bangs on the door, and the guard lets her out. Rod slumps in despair. Evening, Nancy soaks in a bubble bath. As she drifts off, four blades break through the surface of the water between her legs. The gloved hand reaches toward her.
Nancy?
The hand retreats.
What, Mother?
Don't fall asleep in there. You could drown, you know.
Oh, for Pete's sakes.
It happens all the time. I've heated up some warm milk for you, honey.
Warm milk?
Her mom leaves, and Nancy shuts her eyes. She drifts slightly lower in the water, her chin brushing against the soap bubbles. Suddenly, she gets pulled underwater. She thrashes around in a deep pit of water with a narrow shaft of light above. She swims toward the light above her, making it out into the air above the tub, then gets sucked back under.
Nancy!
Nancy grabs the edge of the tub and manages to pull herself back above the water.
Come on, baby.
Marge picks the lock and makes it inside as Nancy wraps herself in a towel.
I'm okay.
Are you okay?
I'm okay.
But I heard you screaming. You were calling me.
I just slipped getting out of the tub, Mom.
But I told you, hundreds of people a year get killed like that, honey.
I know, but I'm okay, Mother. I'm sorry for scaring you.
It's okay. I'll turn down your bed, okay?
All right, I'll get my pajamas on.
Okay.
As her mom leaves, Nancy locks the door. She sits back, wearing her robe in the steamy bathroom. Then, she turns to the medicine cabinet. She takes out a pill bottle that reads, "Stay awake, fast acting." Later, she reclines in bed with the TV on. About to nod off, she catches herself. A horror movie plays. Lounging on her bed, she sits up and shuts off the television. She goes to the window and opens it. Glenn clings to the vine-covered trellis just beneath the ledge. She jumps at the sight of him.
Hi,
I'm sorry. I saw Delilah was on. I thought I'd see how you were.
You know, sometimes I wish you didn't live right across the street.
Will you shut up and let me in?
Did you ever stand on a rose trellis in your bare feet?
Get inside before somebody sees you.
Ow! Shh. I hit my head.
Be quiet. Mom's not even asleep yet.
As she shuts the door, Glenn lies back on her bed.
If you don't mind.
He gets up so she can lie down, and he moves the TV to sit in a chair.
So I heard you freaked out in English class today.
Yeah, I guess I did.
You haven't slept yet, have you?
Not really.
What'd you do to your arm?
I burned it in English class.
She checks a mirror.
God, I look 20 years old. Did you have any weird dreams last night?
I slept like a rock.
Do you believe that people can dream about what's going to happen?
No.
Do you believe in the boogeyman?
No. Rod killed Tina, and you know that.
I've got a crazy favor to ask you.
Uh-oh.
It's nothing hard or anything. I'm gonna go and look for somebody. And I want you to stand like a sort of a guard, okay? Okay.
Okay.
Now you can't mess up. A lot might depend on this.
I won't screw up.
Okay, turn off the light. Okay, here's what we're gonna do.
It's dark in here.
And it's not what you're thinking.
Fade to black. Later. Nancy makes her way out of her house into the foggy air of her front yard. In her pajamas and bare feet, she pads down the sidewalk, looking around her as she goes. Stepping past an old derelict house, she turns back to the sidewalk lined with trees.
Glenn? Are you still watching?
Yeah, so?
I'm just checking.
Glenn steps back behind a tree. Nancy turns back to the yard behind the house. She moves past a glowing orange lamp hanging by a gate. She looks behind her, then ventures further, past trash cans piled high with garbage. Stepping to a door with shards of broken glass lining its broken window, she looks through at a stone building shrouded in fog. She approaches the 5th Precinct Police Building, and jogs across the street to the sidewalk. Nancy makes her way carefully up a grassy hill to the building's barred windows. Gripping the bars, she kneels down and looks inside at Rod, who lies sleeping in his jail cell's cot. The main door outside his cage opens, and Freddy steps in, wearing his brimmed hat and red and green sweater.
Glenn! Glenn! Glenn!
Freddy marches straight through the cell bars, like a ghost. Freddy grins up at her as he lifts the sheet from Rod's bed. Rod wakes up. The cell is empty.
Glenn!
Wearing the clear body bag around her like a shroud, Tina's corpse holds out a hand in greeting. Nancy stares back at her as Tina opens her mouth, letting a large black centipede skitter out from her open lips. Snake-like intestines writhe at Tina's feet. Freddy chases her. She stumbles down the sidewalk, fleeing back toward her house. Inside, she locks the door and starts upstairs, but her feet sink through the melting steps. Freddy smashes through the door's window, wearing Tina's face.
Nancy!
Making it upstairs, she slams her bedroom door and sees Glenn asleep in the chair. To her mirror.
This is just a dream. This isn't real. This is just a dream. He isn't real. He isn't real.
Freddy dives through the mirror, shattering it. He grabs hold of her and pushes her into the bed, raising his glove to strike. They tumble off the bed to the floor. He lifts her up by her shirt as she desperately holds back his bladed hand. Pushing him away, she grabs up her pillow as a shield. Freddy slices it apart, sending feathers into the air. He wrestles her onto the floor by the sleeping Glenn. Suddenly, she thrashes awake by her alarm clock, and Glenn sits up, awake. She turns off the clock and glares at Glenn.
What'd I do?
I just asked you to do one thing. Just stay awake and watch me. Just wake me up if it looked like I was having a bad dream. And what did you do? You shit. You fell asleep.
Nancy?
Oh, shit.
Oh. Shut up and stay there. Don't go away.
As Glenn hides out on the trellis, Marge bursts in.
Are you okay?
Yeah, just a little dream, that's all. I'm going right back to sleep.
Okay. Call me if you need anything, okay?
Okay.
She leaves. Nancy opens her eyes.
Glenn?
A feather drifts in the open window. Now they run up the precinct steps.
You mind telling me what's going on?
Oh, just come on.
Yeah.
Garcia, I've got to see Rod Lane again.
You know, I took the night shift so I could get some peace and quiet.
Look, it's urgent!
In his cell, Rod sleeps on his cot. The blanket covering him stirs, coming alive. The sheet twists and slithers like a snake up Rod's sleeping body to his neck.
Look, we have reason to believe that there might be something very strange going on here.
Got no argument with that.
What are you doing here?
It's an unsolved murder, and I don't like unsolved murders, especially ones that my daughter's mixed up in. What are you doing here? At this hour, you should be home in bed.
I just want to see if he's okay.
Nancy, take my word for it. The guy's sleeping like a baby. He's not going anywhere.
The sheet slowly wraps around Rod's sleeping neck.
All right. Garcia, give me the keys.
All right. Where the hell did I put the keys?
Rod's eyes open as the sheet tightens its grip, like a noose. The sheet drags him across the floor, its endlessly long rope stretching outside the bars of the cell and toward the ceiling. Rod hangs from the end of the rope, his face gray. Donald and the others rush inside.
I gotta move.
Grab his body. Got it. Laura, hurry.
They lay him out on the floor, and Donald checks his pulse. Nancy takes in his grave expression, and cries as the boy's head droops lifelessly to his shoulder. Daytime, mourners are gathered for a funeral in a cemetery.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. May God be with this young man's soul. His life and his death attest to the scripture's warning. But he who lives by the sword shall die by the sword. But let us recall also our Lord's admonition that we judge not, lest we be judged. And may Rod Lane rest in peace.
Marge finds her daughter seated on the cemetery chapel steps.
Time to go, honey.
They go to the car. Donald walks up, smoking a cigarette.
Hop in. The killer's still loose, you know.
You're saying somebody else killed Tina? Who?
I don't know who he is. But he's burned. And he wears a weird hat. And a red and green sweater, really dirty. And he uses these knives, like giant fingernails.
Donald gently pushes her into the car and looks to Marge.
You better keep her home for a few days until she really gets over the shock of this.
I've got something better. I'm going to get her some help.
Marge climbs into the driver's seat. Nancy stares up at Donald from the passenger's side as he wears a haunted expression. Marge drives them off. A sign outside a building reads, Katya Institute for the Study of Sleep Disorders. Nancy lies in bed as a doctor and nurse tape electrodes to her face.
I don't see why you couldn't just give me a pill to keep me from dreaming.
Everyone's got to dream, young lady. If you don't dream, you go. Okay, all set?
No. Please, Nancy. Trust us. It's not you I don't trust, it's just...
Nancy looks between her mom and the doctor.
Okay. Let's do it.
Marge places a kiss on Nancy's forehead and leaves.
Thank you, nurse.
The nurse follows Marge and the doctor out, and the lights dim over Nancy. Her eyes slowly slide shut. Later, Marge sits with the doctor as he monitors a device.
Since the murders. She was fine before that. Now she thinks her dreams are real.
Well, there's no sign of pathology in her EEG. I guess that what we have is just a normal girl who happens to have gone through 2 days of hell.
Asleep, Nancy's head lolls to the side. The EEG prints a read out of her brain activity.
What the hell are dreams, anyway?
Mysteries. Incredible body hocus pocus. The truth is, we still don't know what they are or where they come from. Okay. She's going into deep sleep now. Heart rate is a little high. It's just due to anxiety. Otherwise, she's nicely relaxed. All signs are normal. She could dream at any time now. Beta waves are slowing. She's into REMs now. She's definitely dreaming now. It's a good one, too. Typical dream parameter. A nightmare now would be plus or minus 5 or 6. She's about 3.
Nancy flinches and kicks in her sleep.
Doctor, what's she doing now? Is she asleep or awake?
Something's wrong. It never gets this high.
What's she doing? Is she dreaming?
As she thrashes wildly, they rush into her room. The doctor fills a syringe. Marge finds a shock of gray in Nancy's hair.
This will help you sleep.
No! Oh my God, Earl! Get something!
Her arm is slashed bloody.
What happened?
As the doctor bandages her arm, Nancy reaches under the sheets and takes out Freddy's brimmed hat.
I brought something out from my dream.
Where did you get that?
Later, a clear blue sky spreads wide above Marge and Nancy's home. Nancy comes downstairs to hear her mom talking on the phone in the next room.
She said she grabbed it off his head in her dream. No, I'm not crazy. I'm holding the damn thing right here in my hand. I don't know where she really found it. I gotta go.
Marge quickly hangs up the phone and hides a bottle of liquor as Nancy steps into the kitchen. Nancy picks up a coffee mug and downs it in one long drink.
You didn't sleep at all last night, did you? You know the doctor says you have to sleep or
I'll go even crazier?
I don't think you're crazy. And stop drinking that damn coffee.
So... did you ask Daddy to have the hat examined?
I threw that filthy thing away. I don't know where you really found it or what you're trying to prove.
What I learned in the dream clinic, that's what I'm trying to prove, Mother. Rod didn't kill Tina. And he didn't hang himself.
It's this guy. He's after us in our dreams.
That's just not reality, Nancy. It's real, Mama. Feel it.
Give me that damn thing.
It even has his name written in it. Fred Krueger, Mom. Fred Krueger. Do you know who that is, Mother? Because if you do, you better tell me, because he's after me now.
Nancy, trust your mother for once, please. You'll feel better when you get some sleep.
Feel better? You call this feeling better? Or maybe I should grab that bottle and veg out with you. Avoid everything happening to me by just getting good and loaded.
Marge slaps her, and Nancy steps away holding the hat.
Fred Krueger can't come after you, Nancy. He's dead. Believe me, I know.
You knew about him all this time? And you've been acting like it was something I made up?
Nancy, you're sick. There's something wrong with you. You're imagining things. You'll feel better when you sleep. It's just as simple as that.
Screw sleep!
Nancy throws the liquor bottle to the floor, shattering it, then tosses the hat at Marge.
Nancy, it's just a nightmare.
That's enough.
Now, Nancy and Glenn talk on an arched pedestrian bridge over a river.
Whenever I get nervous, I eat.
And if you can't do that, you sleep.
I used to. Not anymore. Did you ever read about the Balinese way of dreaming?
No.
They got this whole system they call dream skills. So if you have a nightmare, for instance, like falling, right?
Right.
Well, instead of screaming and getting all nuts, you say, okay, I'm gonna make up my mind that I fall into a magic world or do something special like a poem or a song. They get all their art and literature from dreams. Just wake up and write it down. Dream skills.
What if they meet a monster in their dreams? Then what?
They turn their back on it, take away its energy, and it disappears.
But what happens if they don't do that?
Well, then I guess those people don't wake up to tell what happens.
Great.
He looks at a book she's reading.
Booby traps and improvised anti-personnel devices? Well, what are you reading that for?
I'm into survival. See ya.
You're starting to scare me.
She leaves him on the bridge. As evening starts to fall, Nancy jogs back home. She slows, seeing all the windows have been installed with bars. Going to the front door, she notices the rose trellis has been knocked down. She storms inside.
Mother!
Marge steps into the hall in her pajamas and lights a cigarette.
What's with the bars?
Security.
Security? Security from what?
Not from what? From home. Come down to the cellar with me and I'll tell you.
Nancy follows her mom downstairs. Marge sits down by a hulking cast iron furnace and opens its door. Nancy walks up to her with an uncertain expression.
You want to know who Fred Krueger was? He was a filthy child murderer who killed at least 20 kids in the neighborhood. Kids we all knew.
Oh, Mom.
It drove us crazy when we didn't know who it was. But it was even worse after they caught him.
Marge takes an old ratty cloth from inside the furnace.
Did they put him away? All the lawyers got fat and the judge got famous, but somebody forgot to sign the search warrant in the right place and Krueger was free just like that.
What did you do, Mother?
A bunch of us parents tracked him down after they let him out. We found him in an old abandoned boiler room where he used to take his kids.
Go on.
Took gasoline. We poured it all around the place and made a trail of it out the door. Then lit the whole thing up and watched it burn. Can't get you now. He's dead, honey, because Mommy killed him. I even took his knives.
She unfolds the cloth, revealing the leather glove equipped with four blades on the fingers. Lying on his bed with headphones on, Glenn stands and grabs the phone.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh. Hi, how you doing?
Fine. Stand by your window so I can see you. You stand a million miles away.
They gaze at each other from their windows.
That's much better.
I see your mom went ape at the security store today. You look like the prisoner of Zenda or something. How long's it been since you slept?
Coming up on the seventh day.
It's okay, I checked in. The record's 11.
Listen, Glenn. I know who he is.
Who?
The killer.
You do?
Yes. And if he gets me, I'm pretty sure you're next.
Me? Why would anybody want to kill me?
Don't ask. Just give me some help nailing the guy when I bring him out.
Bring him out of what?
My dream.
How do you plan to do that?
Just like I did the hat. Have a hold of the sucker when you wake me up.
Wait a minute. You can't bring somebody out of a dream.
If I can't, then you can all relax because it's just a case of me being nuts.
Yeah, well, I can save you the trouble. You're nutty as a fruitcake. I love you anyway.
Good. Then you won't mind cold-cocking this guy when I bring him out.
What?
You heard me.
I grab the guy in my dream. You see me struggling, so you wake me up. We both come out, you whack the fucker, and we got him.
Are you crazy? Hit him with what?
You're the jock. You have a baseball bat or something.
Just meet me at my porch at midnight. Oh, and meanwhile.
Meanwhile?
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep. Midnight?
Glenn hangs up, shuts the curtains, and gets back in bed.
Oh, man. Midnight. Baseball bats and boogeyman. Beautiful.
He puts on his headphones and switches on the TV. Back in Nancy's room, she gazes sadly at a framed picture of her with Tina Rod and Glenn. She sets the photo aside. Shaking out some pills from a container, she washes them down with a drink from her coffee mug.
Glenn? Honey?
Glenn's mom finds him asleep in bed. She touches him, and he startles.
Glenn. How can you listen to television and hear your records at the same time?
Oh, I wasn't listening to the tube, Ma, just watching. Miss Nude America's gonna be on tonight.
Well, how can you hear what she's going to say?
Who cares what she says?
Oh, don't be such a smart guy. I want you to go to bed. It's almost midnight. Goodness knows we've all had a lot to deal with these last few days.
I will, Ma. You guys turning in?
Pretty soon. Now get to bed.
As his mom leaves, Glenn sleepily rubs his eyes and checks his alarm clock, which reads 11:42. Marge sits with Nancy as she lies in bed.
It's over now, baby. The nightmare's over, please.
Okay.
Marge strokes her daughter's hair. Then she gathers coffee mugs and a coffee pot from around Nancy's room and goes to the door, where she turns off the light. After Marge shuts the door, Nancy jumps out of bed and retrieves a coffee maker with a full pot from underneath her bed. She takes a mug from underneath her pillow and pours herself a cup. After taking a long drink, she goes to her closet, pulls off her t-shirt, and puts on a button-up. She goes to the window and looks out. Nancy sees Glenn's dad standing on his porch, drinking a beer. As he folds his arms and looks sternly up at Nancy, his wife steps out beside him.
You shouldn't stare.
You know what I think? I think that kid is some kind of lunatic or something.
Shouldn't talk that way about that poor child. You mean those bars? Marge is just being cautious, what with her being all alone, Nancy acting so nervous lately.
I don't care what you say. I don't want that kid hanging around with our son anymore.
Ten minutes to midnight. Seated at her desk, Nancy dabs at blood leaking from her bandaged arm. She checks out the window and lets the curtain fall closed again. Getting up, she throws on a jacket and peeks out into the hall. Marge slides a liquor bottle from the linen closet, unscrews the cap, and takes a long drink right from the bottle. Nancy eases her door shut. She hurries to her phone and punches in a number. Glenn Glenn's asleep with the TV on his lap and his headphones on.
Glenn, answer the phone.
Hello? Just a minute. It's her. She wants to talk to Glenn.
About what?
What's this about, Nancy? Just a minute. She says it's private. Very private and very important.
Give me that. Glenn's asleep. You'll have to talk to him tomorrow. You've just got to be firm with these kids. That's all. Let's go. As a matter of fact...
Glenn's father leaves the phone receiver off the hook. Nancy tries again, then angrily hangs up.
Glenn! Don't fall asleep.
She sits on her bed by the phone. She rips the phone's wire out of the wall.
Oh, brilliant. What if Glenn tries to call?
Putting the phone on her bed, Nancy cracks her door to look in the hall. Seeing Marge gone, she starts out. Startled, Nancy slowly steps back toward the phone. She picks up the ripped out cord and studies it. Then, she answers the phone.
Hello?
I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
Freddy's tongue slides out of the receiver, and Nancy slams the phone to the floor and stomps it to pieces. She bolts down the stairs and tries the front door. Her mom waves drunkenly from the couch.
Lock. I locked it all up. I had to. Nancy, you are going to get some sleep tonight if it kills me.
Give me the key, Mother.
I can't. I don't even have it on me.
Glenn snoozes soundly in bed.
It is now 12 midnight, and this is station KRGR leaving the air.
Freddy's arm reaches up and pulls Glenn down into a dark pit in the bed. His TV and record player drop in after him. Suddenly, a torrent of blood surges out of the hole in the mattress. It floods the ceiling, a dark red geyser that whirls and sputters, dripping down the walls. Glenn's mom runs into the room, horrified. She backs out of the room as the bloody liquid remains of her son rain down from the ceiling. An ambulance arrives.
You won't need a stretcher up there. You need a mop.
Let's go. Two police cruisers are parked nearby. Donald pulls up in his car and gets out.
Don't tell me it's another one.
Lieutenant Thompson, I'm sorry to wake you, but I've never seen anything like this before in my life. I knew this was your neighborhood, so I thought I'd better call you right away. The coroner's upstairs now, but I don't think that he's going to...
Donald turns to see Nancy watching from her bedroom window. He gives a strained wave, and she waves back with a stricken expression. Donald goes inside with Glenn's dad, as blood drips from the ceiling into a bucket on the floor.
Oh my God.
Hello? Huh? Yeah, I'll get him right away. Well, Lieutenant, it's your daughter.
Donald and the officer gaze up at the pool of blood dripping down from the ceiling. He goes to the phone.
Nancy?
Hi, Daddy. I know what happened.
I haven't been upstairs yet.
Yeah, but you know he's dead, right?
Yeah, apparently he's dead.
Listen, Daddy, I've got a proposition for you. Listen very carefully, please.
Nancy.
I'm gonna go and get the guy who did it. And I want you to be there to arrest him when I bring him out, okay?
Just tell me who did it. I'll go get him, baby.
Fred Krueger did it, Daddy. And only I can get him. It's my nightmare he comes to. Just come here and break the door down in exactly 20 minutes. Can you do that?
Yeah, sure.
That'll be exactly 12:30. Time enough for me to fall asleep and find him.
Honey, you just do that. Get yourself some sleep. That's what I've been telling you all along.
But you'll be here to catch him?
Lieutenant, they're waiting for you upstairs.
Yeah, sure, I'll be there, sweetheart. Now, look, you just get yourself some rest, please. Deal?
It's a deal.
I love you, sweetheart. Look, go outside and watch my daughter's house. If you see anything funny, call me.
Anything funny like what?
I don't know. One thing for sure, I don't want her coming over here. She's too far gone to be able to handle this.
Back home in the dark, Nancy files a hole in a light bulb and blows away the dust. Then, she wraps bare wire around two thumbtacks stuck inside the pinchers of a wooden clothespin. She clamps the pin on a lifesaver. Nancy stretches a spool of wire across an entryway, about 3 inches above the carpet. She pulls the line taut as she secures it off-screen, then plucks the wire with her finger. Now she carefully fills the hole in the light bulb with black powder. She drops a shotgun shell in an ashtray, then screws the light bulb into a lamp. With a screwdriver, the teen screws in a bolt lock outside her room and slides it open and closed. Then, with the tool clenched in her teeth, Nancy strains as she lifts a sledgehammer and suspends it by wire. She jams the screwdriver into the contraption to hold the mallet in place. Across the street at Glenn's, a detective in a suit steps out of the bedroom and wipes his shoes with a disgusted look. Donald looks into the room, then backs away to join a fellow officer.
How did that, Lieutenant? I don't know. What's the coroner got to say?
He's in the jaw and puking since he saw it.
Nancy sits at her mother's bedside.
I guess I should have told you about him, Nan. Let's just get some sleep, Mom. It's gonna be okay. I was just trying to protect you. I didn't see how much you needed to know. Face things. That's your nature. That's your gift. But sometime you have to turn away, too.
Marge screws the cap on her liquor bottle and sets it aside on her nightstand. She looks meaningfully at her daughter. Nancy tucks a blanket under her mother's chin, kisses her, and turns out the lamp before leaving. Then, she goes to look out the window.
Bye. Okay, Krueger. You play in your court.
Nancy pulls her blinds as the ambulance leaves Glenn's house. She gets into bed and pulls up the covers.
And now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Countdown mode. 10 minutes.
She sets a timer on her watch, lies down, and stares up at the ceiling, grim with determination.
What if they meet a monster in their dreams? Then what?
They turn their back on her, take away its energy, and it disappears.
What happens if they don't do that?
Well, then I guess those people don't wake up to tell what happens.
Nancy shuts her eyes, and darkness clouds the screen. She reappears, standing on the landing of her stairwell. She steps calmly down the stairs and turns a corner to move through the rooms of her darkened home. She goes to the cellar and opens its door. Heading down the steps, Nancy approaches the old furnace. She opens its door and pulls out the gray tattered rag. She shakes it out, but it's empty. Hearing something, she looks around. She goes to a hidden door in the wall and opens it. Inside, she finds a dingy staircase leading down into an orange-lit room. As she climbs down the stairs, the door slams shut behind her. At the bottom of the steps, she makes her way down a set of spiral stairs. She finds herself back in the boiler room with all its hissing pipes and steam. Nancy looks down from the steel catwalk to the concrete floor of the boiler room. Putting her foot on a ladder, she descends. At the bottom, Nancy touches the bandaged wound on her arm and looks around. Nancy heads deeper into the dark of the boiler room. She makes her way down a tight hallway of dripping pipes and steam. Up ahead, an orange glow lights the dungeon-like walls. Stepping into the light, she spots a pile of bedding. She takes a crucifix from underneath the covers. As she holds it up, Freddy's blades caress a pipe. His burned face peers at her from his hiding place, and she whips her head around in fear. He flourishes his knives, and she turns back, searching the room. A chain sways from the ceiling as she steps into a new corridor. She crouches at the foot of a fiery furnace blazing with light, and lifts a pair of headphones from a dark puddle on the floor. Glenn's headphones are stained with blood. Hands trembling, she drops them, then stalks back down the hallway. She checks her watch. Freddy lurches out and chases her down a spiral staircase. She leaps off a ledge and reappears, falling from the window of her house into the bushes. She backs onto the porch. Freddy appears from under the roses. She tackles him, then wakes up with the rose trellis on top of her. She pushes it away and looks around frantically, but it's just her normal bedroom, and she's alone. She sits up and searches the room, then covers her face with her hands.
I'm crazy after all.
Freddy lunges out from behind the bed and chases her. Nancy smashes the coffee pot on his forehead. She makes it outside and locks her bedroom door. The mallet hangs ready. At the window.
Help! I got him! He's dead! I got him trapped! Help! Where are you?
Everything's gonna be alright! Everything's under control!
Get my back, you asshole! Daddy!
She races downstairs and breaks the door's window to shout through. Freddy breaks through the bedroom door, and the sledgehammer swings down into his chest. He falls off the second floor railing, tumbling to a stop at Nancy's feet. She jumps away, then beckons him. Nancy takes cover as Freddy triggers the tripwire. The light bulb explodes behind him. Nancy breaks open another window. Freddy clambers after Nancy, and she flees down into the basement. As Freddy searches for her by the furnace, Nancy grabs a glass bottle of kerosene. She smashes it on him and lights a match. He staggers after her, engulfed in flames. At the top of the stairs, she opens the door and slams it into him, knocking him back down the steps. Freddy waves his fiery arms in agony. By the window, Donald sprints out of Glenn's house.
Parker, I need some help here.
Nancy!
Daddy! Open this door!
Watch
yourself.
I got
it.
Nancy! She leads them to the cellar door.
So you guys come down here.
Oh my God! Nancy, what the hell is going on? Parker, get up here! We've got a fire up here too!
As the police search the basement, she sees flaming footsteps leading up the staircase to the second floor.
What the hell is going on, Nancy?
He's at the mother!
She finds Freddy straddling Marge, setting her in the bed aflame. Nancy smashes a chair over his back. Donald runs in and smothers them both in a sheet. Donald pulls the sheet away to find Marge's body, burned to cinders. Her smoking skeleton lifts an arm as she descends into the blue gloom inside the bed. Lightning flashes inside the foggy pit, then the bed sheets reappear, neatly made and empty of Marge and Freddy.
Mother! Mother! Mother!
Nancy slaps the empty sheets of the bed.
Now do you believe me?
They've got the fires out downstairs. Everything okay up here?
Donald shuts the door and wraps his daughter in a protective hug.
I'm okay. You go downstairs. I'll be there in a minute.
Lieutenant, is everything all right?
I don't know. She gazes down at the bed, trembling with fear and rage. The door slams shut and locks behind her. Nancy resolutely turns her back on the bed. Wisps of fog drift from the empty bedsheets. Suddenly, Freddy's bloody skull rises up from beneath the sheet, stretching out its steaming fabric, as he stares hungrily at Nancy.
I know you're there, Freddy.
His hand appears in silhouette, and his bladed hand rips through the sheet.
I know you too well now, Freddy.
No. You die.
It's too late, Kruger. I know the secret now. This is just a dream. You're not alive. This whole thing is just a dream.
She turns to face him.
I want my mother and friend again.
You what?
I take back every bit of energy I gave you. You're nothing. You're shit.
She turns and reaches for the door. As Freddy lunges for her, he disintegrates into sparkling light. Nancy steps through the door into a sunlit afternoon.
God. It's bright.
Marge joins her.
Gonna burn off sooner. It wouldn't be so bright.
Feeling better?
Oh, I feel like $1,000,000. They say you've bottomed out when you can't remember the night before. No, baby, I'm gonna stop drinking. I just don't feel like it anymore. Did I keep you awake last night? You look a little bit peaked.
No. I guess I just slept heavy.
Okay. I'll see you.
Glenn pulls up to the curb, with Tina and Rod in the backseat.
Hi, everybody.
Believe this, Bob?
Oh, I believe anything is possible.
Bye.
Nancy gets in Glenn's convertible. The top slams down, striped in red and green.
What's going on?
Hey, I'm not doing it.
Glenn, get it down!
I'm not doing it.
What's going on with the window?
Marge waves and smiles as the car traps Nancy and her friends inside. Marge watches as Glenn's car drives them off. Three little girls play jump rope in the fog on the neighboring lawn. Freddy's arm bursts through the door window behind Marge and yanks her inside. Credits: John Saxon, Ronnie Blackley, Heather Langenkamp, Amanda Wiss, Nick Corey, Johnny Depp, Charles Fleischer, Joseph Whipp, Robert Englund, Lynn Shea, Joe Unger, Mimi Meyer Craven, Jack Shea, Ed Call, Sandy Lipton, David Andrews, Jeffrey Levine, Donna Woodrum, Shashani Hall, Carol Pritikin, Brian Riza, Jason Adams, Don Hanna, Leslie Hoffman, Paul Grenner. More credits roll.
I locked the doors, I nailed the windows tight. I looked at everything would be all
A Nightmare on Elm Street. New Line Cinema.